honestly, it's every day. Every day you come home and you just see his tag his tail wagging. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, no matter if it's a good day or a bad day or a good game or a bad game, you know, you come home and he's wagging his tail and he's happy to see you. And I think that always puts a smile on my face.
Mark Scheifele talking about his best friend, his dog Oliver, as we begin Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets, episode 175, I've been told, and one of the architects of this podcast, one of the founding fathers, is Mitchell Glinton, joining me here today on Ground Control. Mark Scheifele, of course, is our special guest coming up a little bit later, and guess what he'll be talking about? A little hockey, Oliver, and of course, my favorite subject, Marvel. Marvel movies.
You guys will go deep on that. I've heard you guys talk about it in the room before. It's impressive.
We go down rabbit holes every once in a while, and I think Mark feels comfortable because I don't go to him about hockey all the time, which is now what you're focus on because of being part of the broadcast. Before we get into the switch for you, you told a great story about Mark going golfing with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, his love for his dog, Oliver, has no boundaries, does it?
No. And I should say it's definitely not like Mark texts me to go golfing.
Yes.
It doesn't. We just happen
Let's
to be.
Let's preface that, yes.
Yeah, we just happen to be members at Southwood here in Winnipeg. So there was one situation where he was going to be playing out there and I think Gregor, one of our communications guys, was going as well, and they needed a fourth, and they asked me to go, and it was, I remember it being a really windy day, which there tends to be a few of those out at Southwood, and so one hole, his head cover on his driver, at least at the time, was literally an exact image of his dog, Oliver, so he takes the head cover off, because he's going to hit driver on the hole, puts it on his bag, and he walks away, and then the wind knocks Oliver off the bag, and he just turns and goes, "Oliver, get back here." I thought it was funny.
Now, is it only one head cover?
Yeah, just the driver he's got that he has with Oliver. But I remember seeing it like as soon as, because I obviously don't play with him a lot, I remember seeing it and being like, well, that's fitting.
Now, is there pressure when you go golfing with an
Tons.
NHLer?
So the funny
Especially
part
when
is,
it golfs as much as he does?
The funny part is if it's the same round that I think I'm thinking of, I actually had
I've golfed with him more than just one time.
My first or second COVID shot, I think is what it was, the day before. So when Gregor had texted me about this chance, I'm like, well, I know I'm not going to feel good, but like, I do not get the chance to play with Mark or any of our guys really very often. So when the opportunity came, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to do it. But of course, I was definitely the guy on the first tee being like, hey guys, you know, just setting the tone right away.
Just don't be disappointed.
Yeah.
And crashes one.
Yeah,
300 yards.
Yeah, I wish. But it was a fun round despite me being sore all over. Mark's a tremendous player. He's played in the Manitoba Open a couple of times, and man, he hits the ball a long way, so he's fun to watch.
Listen, a change for you this year. You've taken over into the broadcast booth as color analyst. How much have you enjoyed, and what is? I know you've done it because I've been sick and I've had COVID, and you covered for Paul last year or 2 years ago. Now the time has gone by so fast. But what's it been like, and how much are you enjoying it?
I love it for sure. Mm-hmm. I always say one of the things, and this isn't to pump your tires, but it was one of the things that.
That's why you're on the podcast.
One of the things that really was a relief to me at the time, and I say this to anybody who asked about it, was the fact that it was your choice that you wanted to step back to spend more time with your family, an admirable thing for sure. Because so often I think in media, sometimes it goes the other way.
Yeah. It's not our choice,
you know? So that's honestly what made it a lot easier to transition into. And, but it's been good. I mean, you've worked with Paul before. He's an absolute pro and pretty much makes things easy. Honestly, the hardest thing that I've had to deal with is, and you know this from working with me for a number of years, every year I get a cold. Usually it's in training camp.
I've gone to New York because of your colds. So
exactly.
Thank you.
That year,
I was not sad. Like, I was sad you were sick, but I'm like, I'm going to New York.
Yeah, no problem there. But so in the previous job, I could kind of get away with it because, like, you know, you're not talking during the game. You're kind of just watching, doing your thing. Now, I got my cold, if you will, a little bit later on. I'm so thankful for the cough button because I literally the last 3-4 games have just been leaning on it because one of the last things when I'm getting over this cold that I always get is a cough.
Mm-hmm.
And I can talk for like two or three sentences, and then it's like I have no air left and I've got a cough. So battled through that. That was kind of most of the California trip that we just went on.
What a terrible time to have it,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could get the vitamin D, if you will.
Plenty.
But it just seemed I would be feeling pretty good most of the day. We'd get into the cold rink and start coughing immediately. So
A long time ago when I first got in the business, I went to the Grey Cup in Vancouver. I was working for City TV, or sorry, A-Channel. And I got to the Grey Cup, and the first night we were there, I lost my voice. So automatically, everybody thinks you were partying. That's the best.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I was a partier in those days. But I had to go live the next day. And I was like, were you partying last night? No, I wasn't. Nobody believed me. But I got my voice for Grey Cup Sunday. But the whole week was a gamble. So I totally. And that was in November.
Well, and if anybody wants to dig it up, you can go back in the old archives on WinnipegJets.com, find the Patrick Laine 5-goal game in St. Louis. Guess who was battling pneumonia? That stand-up was a grind.
Before we move on to the Jets themselves, one of the most stressful part of our job, and I did it with, you know, sometimes you wouldn't go on the road, was that stand-up before, after a game, and the bus is leaving. Like, I never understood urgency until you have to do a stand-up on your bench, on the team's bench, while everybody's packing up around you.
Yeah, so, and more often than not, there's usually someone that works with the visiting team, kind of cleaning up the bench too. So you're just kind of like, I need a minute and a half, and he's like, okay, and he just stands there, and you're like,
yeah,
and then okay, I guess I have to be perfect.
It's amazing how many people sit there and stare at you when you do something like that. Which, you know, we've done it so many times, but it still is nerve wracking when you're standing there trying to nail exact details, and those people that are watching don't know if you're lying or not, if you made a mistake,
right?
But, and you know,
one of my favorite memories, this wasn't even necessarily with the team, but a stand-up that I did, it was one of those times where the Stanley Cup was coming in and around Winnipeg. I think this was early 2011 or so, and I went out there, there's a line of people to see the Stanley Cup, but so for the shot, we need to have the Stanley Cup in the background, so I'm doing this stand-up right next to a line of, I want to say, 45-50 people, and I'm just like, this is going to be one of those days, and it was. Seven, eight, nine takes, and it's like the first four or five, it was in the same spot every single time. So when I was doing my sixth take, I guess, and I got past that point, and you could see it in everybody's face. They're like, oh, he got past it. And then I started laughing because everybody made a face.
Because you notice, when people are staring at you, especially in those situations. Yeah. Something we have noticed, and we're taping this Tuesday morning. The Jets have fallen in overtime to the Montreal Canadiens 3-2, a game they trailed 2-0, fought back to tie it up at 2, gave a power play goal in overtime, which brings us to the first topic or concern. And again, we're nitpicking here because the team is playing very well. Mm-hmm. They're only 1 point out of first place in the Central Division, a very competitive top three in the Central right now with Colorado and Dallas. Special teams.
Yeah.
We've talked incessantly about the 5-on-5 play for the Jets, which has been spectacular.
It really has.
But, you know, you did a little math in your head. It's maybe four games where, give or take, where special teams has cost them two points or 1 point.
And the standard in the room would be even higher. They'd probably argue there's even more games where they would find, you know, a situation where, hey, a kill here or a kill there.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge is, and I remember talking to Dylan DeMello about the penalty kill. We'll start there in Arizona. And it was the day before the Nito Niederreiter hat trick game, I believe. And he was just saying the frustrating part with the penalty kill is it's not even it's one thing, right? Or one specific thing that you can look at, because he's it's not we're getting seamed to death out there. Teams are having a tough time finding that seam. But he goes, it's a bounce here. We'll kill off a minute 45 of it and it'll look great. And then for whatever reason, there'll be a bounce here, bang, back of the net. Or every little mistake is just finding its way in. It's not necessarily a goaltender's fault or anybody. It's just that's how it's been going for Winnipeg this year on the penalty kill. A little bit of personnel change, certainly, but I think they would have kind of ironed through some of that. I thought one of the best ways that I've ever heard it put, Rick Bowness one day said, it's we're overcooking the penalty kill a little bit, because sometimes you'll get stuck out there and then all these guys want to be the reason or want to make sure that the penalty kill works, and they get a little bit out of unison. They overstretch themselves. They overdo something. They get out of formation a little bit. There's your seam pass, and there it is in the back of the net. So it's just a little bit of details. The power plays, I find that the most confounding thing, because I remember the first game of the season in Calgary, and the Jets' power play, I don't think they scored, but they looked tremendous. Mm. The amount of speed and motion and fluidity, they were all over the place. Like, I think Mark Scheifele was in the left dot, the slot, net front, slot. Like, it was everywhere. So I think, and then Gabriel Vilardi gets hurt. You have to make adjustments and whatnot. And now Kyle Connor's out. So that's certainly a lethal part of your power play. So I think there's a little bit of some adjustment there going on. But I think ultimately with power play, it always comes down to execution and how quickly you're moving the puck. So I'm sure those things are being hammered in on the Winnipeg Jets during every single power play meeting, which I'm sure they have every single day. It's just, for whatever reason, not going with the regularly that you would expect with the skill out there.
We just talked about Gabe Vilardi, and this is our last topic here. Listen, he missed a long mm-hmm. he was out a long time. Now it does not look like he did.
No.
He claims that there's still some more, which is absolutely terrifying if you're another team. But let's speak to where Gabe Vilardi is right now and what the Jets have in this 24-year-old forward.
Yeah, I love watching him play along the boards, honestly. He's scored some – he's made some skilled plays in front of the net, and, you know, the deflection against Anaheim, the insurance marker against Colorado. He's made some really nice plays in and around the net, but it's his work along the walls. Like, I believe it was Mark Scheifele he set up against Chicago, you know, on the – that was a power play rush where he just makes this – it looks like he's just going to go up that strong side wall, and he just decides, nope.
Yeah.
And cuts and makes a move, gets himself into space, and then the Jets are in a dangerous spot. So he's a big body, and I think now that he, you know, had commented on the fact he's got to wear a brace the rest of the year, I think he's kind of getting used to it. And once you're used to it, I think it just kind of becomes this thing that's in the back of your head and you don't really think about it too much. And I think he's kind of getting to that point. So now we're starting to see the Gabe Vilardi that we saw a lot of early on in the season as he was getting used to his line mates, but now there's a little bit of regularity. He seems to feed off Mark Scheifele and Nikolaj Ehlers really well. But his board play is, I think, what stands out to me the most. He's a guy that wins a lot of those battles. And then once that battle's won, and I think against the Montreal Canadiens, the first goal that Winnipeg scores is a result of a puck battle win. And once you're able to pull that puck off the wall, you got Mark Scheifele and Nikolaj Ehlers on your line, a lot of good things are going to happen.
Mark Scheifele coming up a little bit later on the podcast. Mitchell Clinton, continuing success on the broadcast.
Thank you.
680 CJOB and Power 97. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
You as well, good sir.
Reminder, Mark Scheifele is on the way here on Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets. Many thanks to Mitchell Clinton, my earlier guest, to go over the special teams issues and, of course, Gabe Vilardi. And speaking of Gabe Vilardi, man, what a performance in Los Angeles and his return to California to face his former team, the Los Angeles Kings. Gabe Vilardi is our play of the week subject.
Time after a practice.
He's always got the time.
He does.
And Vilardi shoots and scores! Gabriel Vilardi on the backhand. He comes home and gives the Jets a two-goal lead.
Unbelievable homecoming for Gabe Vilardi.
All right, the original six visitor stretch continues here at Canada Life Center. Wednesday, the Detroit Red Wings are in town. Andrew Kopp is back here in Winnipeg. And then finally, the last game before the holidays, the Boston Bruins. Those games are never boring. The Bruins are cruising right now. Make sure you get your tickets right now. WinnipegJets.com/tickets. Detroit Wednesday, Boston Friday. Mark Scheifele is coming up on the podcast after this.
Hi, I'm Gabriel Vilardi. And this is the Ground Control Podcast.
Are you looking for something to do over the holidays? Well, we have an answer for you. Go to WinnipegJets.com/tickets. Everything you need is right there. You can go to the New Year's Eve game. It's a matinee affair against the Minnesota Wild. Or on January 2nd, the first game of 2024, the Tampa Bay Lightning are in town. And I guarantee you right now, those games are never boring. You don't have a bad choice here. It's the Wild on New Year's Eve. Or the Tampa Bay Lightning on January 2nd. Get tickets to one or both at WinnipegJets.com/tickets. Mark, we'll ask you just a couple of questions before we get to the meat of the matter here. Just the relief you have felt after that last contract you signed. I know you're very excited the day of, but how does it feel now that it's so far behind you?
Yeah, it feels like you know, forever ago now.
Yeah.
But it feels good. You know, I'm really happy with my decision. It's been a great start to the year. So that's obviously been, that's made it even better, obviously. But it's nice to have it over with. You know, I sometimes I kind of have to pinch myself and be like, you know, imagine actually going through it a different way right now. And you know, I wouldn't change anything for the world. So I'm really excited and really excited for, you know, the way the team's playing. So, you know, I can't complain.
You think about all the mentors you've had over the years, and mentors are so important, especially in professional sports. You think about Dale Howard, Chuck, you think about Adam Oates.
Yeah, obviously all in very, very different ways. You know, obviously Dale was, you know, a huge part of me at a younger age. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of things to learn, a lot to pack in into, you know, probably only like realistically 2 years, because I was up for, you know, the 1 year, and then that the lockout year I came up after. So, you know, a lot of packed into in a little amount of time. And, you know, I learned so much from Dale. He was so instrumental in just kind of teaching me to think differently about hockey and, you know, just work on my game. And, you know, it was such an amazing time I had in Barrie. And I'm so thankful for that time that I had with that team and mm-hmm. especially with Dale. And, you know, and then obviously, you know, I've been with Oatsy for a long time now, probably, I think it's been like 8 years. So,
man, time's flowing on that one.
Yeah, I know. And, yeah. And every day there's still more to learn. And that's the one thing I love about him, is that he's a guy that continues to watch, and he's got so much knowledge, and he continues to watch and watch and watch and watch. You know, I can't fathom the amount of video that he goes over, and you know, every day there's new clips, every day there's new things to work on, every time I talk to him, there's a new thought to work on when I'm on the ice. And that's what I love about it, is because he continues to push the envelope, he continues to push me to want more and to push for more and continue to work on things. And I think that's so crucial in the game of hockey, because it's always changing, it's always developing, and to have a guy like him on my side is amazing, and I'm lucky to have him and excited to continue to learn from him.
Well, let's move on to Christmas. It's that time of the year to be thankful. So your favorite Christmas food? Is this the time of year you would cheat?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like, you know, cookies and, you know, everything. I love turkey, so yeah. I gotta go with you know, turkey and stuffing and you know, the whole you know, turkey dinner. I think I'm gonna go with that.
Just the tradition of it.
I love a good turkey dinner, and you know, eggnog. Actually, eggnog is a good one. I love eggnog at Christmas, yeah. And I feel like that's the only time you ever really drink it. So I'd go with eggnog.
Favorite Christmas movie?
It's got to be The Grinch, the Jim Carrey one.
Yeah, my kids just watched that one today. Favorite Christmas memory or present?
I think my favorite Christmas memory, you know, growing up was always, you know, my best friend, Brendan. They lived across the street for, you know, pretty much our entire childhood. I always say he's been my best friend since I was 3 days old.
Yeah.
Cause that's when I came home from the hospital, and obviously he was there and we were babies, but, I every Christmas Eve, you know, it would flip flop. It would go between, you know, them coming to our house or us going to their house. And, you know, I think the memories that his mom makes the best, like, nacho dip ever. So I'd say, those are always the things that I think back on and miss. And, you know, when I don't get to go over to the Swartridges for Christmas Eve, that's something that I always miss. But those are always the big memories that I cherish with my family and his.
Obviously, family won't be here this year with you. How much does Oliver help that?
A lot. Yeah, Oliver, you know, always puts a smile on my face. So, you know, he's, you know, I'm sure he'll have some Christmas outfits on, but, you know, he'll just be excited to mooch off all of try to get some treats from everyone.
What's the one thing that Oliver brings to you that, you know, that a lot of people can't? Like, dogs are such, they're great, they're loyal, but what's the one favorite thing about Oliver provides for you and vice versa?
Honestly, it's every day. Every day you come home and you just see his tag his tail wagging. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, no matter if it's a good day or bad day or a good game or a bad game, you know, you come home and he's wagging his tail and he's happy to see you. And I think that always puts a smile on my face.
Well, you know, when you signed your contract, I was excited that you're clearly here for the team and the city. But one thing I get to talk Marvel with a lot with. So let's go down the list here. And this is the real reason why I kind of brought you here. Loki 2, arguably the best thing Marvel has done since Endgame, in your opinion.
I I would say so. I think I don't think there's even anything close. I think you know, with Kang being more present, and it kind of like setting the stage for everything. You know, I've liked everything they've had out, but I think you know, me and a lot of people are included in that is, you know, Endgame happens and there's so much hype and there was so much excitement that, you know, you're kind of continuing to search for that. You've had a taste of that. Now you just want more of that. And obviously they have to continue to set up, you know, what's to come. But Loki 2 was fantastic, and you know, the ending was wild. But I'm really excited to see what they, you know, what they have in store from here on out. But you know, that set the stage for some pretty incredible things.
Do you think Marvel's put themselves in a tough spot after Endgame, everything leading up to it, that is very hard to duplicate, and that's what everybody wants?
I think so. They did such a good job. Even like the whole lead up from, you know, Iron Man 1 to Endgame, everything was in such a good succession, and you got even more excited. And then, you know, you introduced the Avengers, and the first Avengers was amazing. And the way that they, you know, you really didn't see Thanos until very, very late, and you saw him in a few, you know, end credit scenes, and you saw him kind of very sparingly, you know, like when the Infinity Gauntlet comes out,
yeah.
and you know, you really only got like a little taste of him, but you felt like you knew it was all, you, everyone kind of knew it was coming, but everyone was excited to see what actually happens. And I think, like, you have to understand, I think from how I take it is you kind of have to start from ground zero. There's a whole new world coming out, and they kind of dived into it a little bit in Endgame, you know, with going back in time and the multiverse and all that. But then you have to continue to set it up, and I think that's what, you know, me, you know, what everyone I assume is wanting more Endgame, when you have to wait. You know, we waited for however many years for Endgame to actually come.
Yes.
We have to wait, you know, just as long for the next phase to really like go through what it needs to be set up properly and done correctly.
Secret Invasion. One criticism was James Rhodes being a Skrull. What was your end thought of that?
Yeah, it was
a big criticism. You know, obviously,
I didn't mind it. Yeah. Like I didn't think about it too much. I thought it was kind of like a cool caveat to you know, that they actually had someone of such stature and obviously trust in the government.
Yeah.
That, you know, he's obviously behind the scenes. I'm curious what happens with Talos's daughter.
Yeah.
And how crazy of powers she has now, and like I'm really curious when that actually comes back into the forefront. I'm excited about to see where, you know, Shang-Chi comes back. Like, I feel like that movie was so fantastic.
And then
we haven't seen him since. Yeah. So I'm kind of like I keep on thinking I'm going to get a taste of, you know, what's happened so long ago. But, you know, then when you think back, you're like, okay, like, you know, just be patient. Try to be patient.
The Marvels. So I apologize to anybody that's listening to this or watching this that hasn't seen The Marvels. I just went down the rabbit hole last night with Eric Voss to get a feel of what they were trying to do. So you've had some time to digest it and take it in. What is your end thought of The Marvels and what they brought out?
You know, I thought it was good. It wasn't like I came out like real fired up, like I do in a lot of the other movies. You know, I just didn't see the obviously, you know, with at the end with, you know, Monica Rambeau going into another dimension, and then seeing her mom, which isn't her mom, and seeing, like, I think that end scene made me more fired up than what the movie actually did. You know, the movie, it was a shorter one, so I feel like when I go to a Marvel movie, I always like kind of, you know, I like 2.5 hours. I don't mind sitting in the theater.
I like investing.
Long.
Yeah.
I you know, when I go to a movie, I want to invest in a lot of time. And you know, the movie itself was just fine to me. I wasn't a huge fan, but then at the end, it did get me kind of fired up, because it seems like, you know, obviously now X-Men getting involved into the Marvel universe is pretty exciting. So I think that got me more excited about than the actual movie.
So last one for you. Do you think that Marvel's in a lot of trouble right now, or you still believe in the process of where they're going?
I'm going to believe in the process. I'm a fan through and through. I'm not just a bandwagoner that, you know, that popped up, a couple
years
ago.
You've invested a lot of time.
I've invested a lot of time, and I'm going to see it through. I think Kevin Feige is a genius, and I think he's got plans for a lot more, and I think he's trusting in the process as well. He's not trying to just throw out movies that are going to, you know, blow everyone's mind every time. He knows that there's got to be a process to it, and they got to do it the right way, and I think I trust in it.
Buddy, thank you so much for this. Merry Christmas to you and your family, and best of luck going forward this season.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'm not going to lie, I could talk with Mark Scheifele about Marvel for another hour, but he only had 10 minutes. It was a game day, so many thanks to Mark Scheifele. Of course, thank you to Mitchell Clinton for stopping by as well. That'll do it for the 175th edition of Ground Control, the official podcast of the Winnipeg Jets. Thanks for watching or listening. A special guest next week, Dennis Bayak, former Winnipeg Jets broadcaster, on his last World Junior Tour, as he'll be heading to Sweden for that one. We'll talk to him just before he departs. That'll be on December 26th for that release. Thanks again for watching. We'll see you soon.